So, we have been tracking over the last 2 and a bit months, because we had a few Sundays off for guest speakers and whatnot, to do the 8 weeks of the Emotionally Healthy Spirituality course as a Sunday morning series, and we are finally at the end. You know that way where you've been looking at something and you've been looking at the goal and you just never think it's coming? And we are finally on the last week this week. And you know, it's been interesting tracking on this. It's been interesting hearing the comments that are coming back from people. And I want to say thank you to folks who have done exactly that and commented. It is so good to get feedback. It's so good for people to come and say, well, this worked and this didn't work, and if we did more of that or we did. And I'm really, really keen to hear that. So if that's something that you haven't done yet, that you want to feedback in terms of how this has affected you or not affected you or anything else, then I'd be really happy to hear that. If you're on the Facebook page, on the Emotionally Healthy Facebook group that we set up, then comment through there, message me, text me, email me, whatever, but it's good to get feedback. I want to tell you, first of all, before we kind of launch into the actual material for today, that somebody asked me a question yesterday that I've never ever been asked before. So I've been doing the inner healing stuff for quite some time now, probably close on 10 years now. And somebody asked me a question yesterday that I've never, ever been asked before. I met a lovely, lovely man yesterday with huge potential. God all over him, huge amount of gifting and all the rest of it. But by his own admission, a very broken man as well. And he asked me a question straight up. And it was one, you know, sometimes when people ask you questions, it's almost like the world just stops in that moment. And it's like there's this holy moment thing going on in just in that time. And that happened for me yesterday. He looked at me, and after he told me his story and he told me what he was struggling with, he looked at me and he said, "Can God really put my broken soul back together again?" And nobody has ever asked me that before. It's maybe been implied in conversations, but nobody has ever, I've never met anybody with the courage to actually ask that question and say those words and want an answer. And I was thinking this morning, just as we were worshiping, as the guys were leading us in worship this morning, you know, the answer to that question is yes. God can put your broken soul back together again. You know, I work predominantly with people who have had various levels of trauma in their lives. And sometimes in terms of working with folks who have had significant amounts of trauma in their life, we work with something called dissociation. And we all dissociate from time to time. So the other night when I was driving home, I kind of came to somewhere on the motorway and thought, I have no idea where I am now. I've got onto the motorway and I've driven. And you know that way where you just come to and you think, how on earth did I get here? I've zoned out somewhere. And there's that level of dissociation that we all do. But then at the other end of the scale, there's the dissociation that is a wonderful God-given gift that allows us to just come out of something that's too painful and too sore to actually experience, to come out of that and not experience it and then come back into life again. Beautiful God-given gift, but sometimes that causes difficulty for people. And in the world of the secular world of mental health, I met a psychiatrist a number of years ago who I was talking about dissociation with and talking about folks, and some of you have heard some of this stuff before, people with parts of themselves and multiple parts of themselves who switch in and out, and sometimes they're one person and sometimes they're somebody else. And this psychiatrist was talking about how she works with those particular folks. And I was waiting for her to get to the part where she talked about integration and she talked about these folks being healed. And she never ever got there. And so I went to her at the end of what she was delivering and I said to her, "What about integration? What about wholeness for folks again?" And she looked at me and she said, "No, dear, these people are far too broken. We could never expect. The best we can ever hope is that we can encourage people to just live with what they've got." And that made me so indignant. I thought, you know, that's not true. I have a God who can put broken souls back together again. And when I looked at that man yesterday, I thought, yes, absolutely. God can, and indeed God will put somebody's broken soul back together again. And I wanted to share that with you because that was, I hadn't even thought of saying that this morning until we were in the middle of worship this morning. And I can't even remember which song we were on. And I thought, you know, that is true. And maybe you need to hear that this morning. That actually, if you've come through a whole pile of diagnosis in various places that folks have just said, here, try this or try that or try the next thing. We have a God who puts broken people back together again, whether it's their body or their mind or their spirit that's broken. He puts us back together again. And the answer to, can God really restore my soul? Can he really put my soul back together again? Is yes, he can. So if that's you this morning, then come and receive that. Can I tell you that sometimes it doesn't happen like that? Because actually the kindness of God is that it would be too much for it just to happen like that. Sometimes it's a process over a period of time. If you want that and you want to walk with us, we will walk with you until you get to the end of that process. That's the commitment from the family here. And it's also the commitment from the Inner Healing Ministries here as well. So can God really put my soul back together again? Yes, he absolutely can. And one of the things that we've been tracking through in the last while as well, you know, what is there? Because sometimes we can only address brokenness that's there if we actually know it's there. So if we don't know it's there, we're never actually going to be able to address it. And one of the things that we've been doing over the last 7 weeks is we've been looking at some of the stuff that might be going on in us, some of the stuff that might be going on in our relationship with other people, and some of the stuff that might be going on in our relationship with God. In terms of that brokenness. And we started off with the iceberg right at the very beginning. That's where we started in terms of emotionally healthy stuff. It should be the next slide, I hope. We started off with the iceberg, and what we talked about with the iceberg was that an iceberg, what you see of the iceberg is only the tip of it. It's only a tiny wee bit, and there's all this stuff that's underneath. And so what we see with the iceberg in terms of us is how we behave. So we see how we interact with one another. We see how we interact, how we treat ourselves. We see how we interact with God. And that's what we see with one another. And sometimes we're left puzzled and making assumptions about each other and even assumptions about ourselves because we haven't ever dug below the surface. We haven't ever gone underneath the surface of the water to see what's underneath. And over the last 7 weeks, we've been looking at what's underneath. So what's underneath for us sometimes is issues that we picked up around about our family of origin. Sometimes it's about our prejudices. Sometimes there's stuff about the walls that we build. Sometimes it's about the fact that Jesus, our God, has taken us to a wall and we actually have to sit with our wall and work out what it is he's trying to teach us there. Sometimes it's our losses, sometimes it's about the rhythms of life and what we do with those and how we work those. And sometimes it's actually about just being able to understand what our emotions are doing. So we've looked at all of that over the last 7 weeks. And now my question is, so what? And I came across this, which I thought was really interesting. Over the last 7 weeks, there's been a lot of information that has come to you. So over the last 7 weeks, there's been lots of information. And you might, over the last 7 weeks, have liked what was being said and have been really caught up with it and been quite motivated about, yes, I want to do this and I'm going to follow the email and I'm going to do this and I'm going to dig in and I'm going to change my patterns and I'm going to change my rhythms and I'm going to dig in with God and I'm going to communicate with other people and I'm going to sit with my stuff. And maybe you've been really motivated with that. But information plus motivation doesn't always equal transformation. Because the thing is, I don't know, and again, I've said this over the last 7 weeks, maybe it's only me, so maybe you're not like this. But you know, if you go to conferences or even coming here on a Sunday morning, and sometimes when we come to here or when we go to conferences, we sit and we scribble away for answers, and we think, yeah, that's a really good point, we'll write that down. And then 2 weeks' time, we come back, and it's almost like you could be hearing the same thing in 2 weeks' time, and then you're thinking, oh, that's a great idea, that's a great point, and you're scribbling it down again. Or I've gone to CLAN over the course of years and taken notes and notes and more notes, and at the time thought, that's a brilliant idea, but actually, did it transform the way I live? Well, no, it didn't always, and it often didn't transform the way I live, because the information plus the motivation isn't actually enough. What we need is a cunning plan. And here he comes up on the screen. Yes, he is there. There we go. So we need a cunning plan. We don't need Baldrick, but we do need a cunning plan. And this morning, that's what we're going to do. We're going to look at the cunning plan. We're going to look at, so how do you get transformation? And if information and motivation don't always equal transformation, what is it you need? You need a cunning plan. You actually need to have thought through, what is it I'm going to do? How am I going to do it? And who am I going to tell about it? I want to look very briefly into Acts chapter 2, because the early church had a cunning plan of how they were actually going to follow through on all the stuff that they had learned and all the stuff that they had absorbed while they were around Jesus. So let's look at Acts 2, and we're looking at 42 to 47. They devoted themselves to the apostles' teaching and to fellowship, to the breaking of bread and to prayer. Everyone was filled with awe at the many wonders and signs performed by the apostles. All the believers were together and had everything in common. They sold property and possessions to give to anyone who had need. Every day they continued to meet in the temple courts. They broke bread in their homes and they ate together with glad and sincere hearts, praising God and enjoying the favor of all the people. And the Lord added to their number daily those who were being saved. The early church had a plan, and it's in Acts 2 here. They learned together, they ate together, they shared what they had, and they worshipped and they prayed together. That was their plan. That's how they did it. That was it. It wasn't complicated. It was really quite simple. There were four things in there that you can pick out that they did. That's what they did together. And the fruit of that was, added to their number daily those who were being saved. So they had a plan. So they'd had the information, they had the motivation, they had a plan, and then there was transformation because the community round about them was transformed. Sometimes this plan, and in the emotionally healthy spirituality material, this plan is called the rule of life. Often Christianity and religion, but Christianity specifically, gets a really bad press in terms of rules. So folks who are outside looking in think, well, I'm not going to do that because you need to do this and that and that and that and that, and you need to keep all of these rules. A rule of life is not like that. Unfortunately, that word rule has lots of connotations for us. That word rule actually comes from the original Greek. It's like a trellis. That's why the trellis picture's up there. So the rule of life is not a rule like a you should, you must, and you will, and you have to do this. A rule of life is a bit like a trellis that you build so that you can grow up round about it. So a trellis for a plant, you would put a trellis in the ground, and actually as the plant grows and changes, so you need to adapt the trellis in order to get the plant to grow where you want it to grow. So being the great horticultural experts that we are, we know this, not. If you start with a wee teeny plant with the trellis, and it's just a wee teeny trellis like that, when the plant starts to grow up and gets to become a really big plant, you actually need to expand the trellis to allow the plant to grow. Otherwise, you'll constrict it. And that's what the rule of life is about. It's about, what do I need in my life at the moment to help me grow? What does that look like? And we're going to think about this morning very quickly and really quite briefly in terms of where we've been over the last 7 weeks with the up, the in, and the out stuff. So we're thinking about it in the shape of a triangle. Now, if you've been around here for a wee while, you'll know that we do life shapes, and there's a triangle that looks like that. This one is slightly adapted from that, so put the original life shape to one side. I'm going to reinvent it just a little this morning. So we're going to think about up, first of all. We're going to think about our relationship with God. We're going to think about in being our relationship with ourself. And we're going to think about out being our relationship with the world. What do we have to do at this moment? And it'll be different for you than it is for me. What do we have to do? What do we need at this moment to allow us to grow? In which areas of our life, and it might only be one of them that God is highlighting, are we actually being encouraged to grow and to do something differently? So let's look it up first of all. And I've given you some ideas there. When you think about your up relationship, when you think about your relationship with God, what is it that God has been pushing you, and maybe it's not your up relationship, but if it is for you, what is God nudging you with in terms of the up relationship this morning or over the last few weeks? Do you need to get into Scripture? Is that something that you've struggled with? But actually, you need to get into God's word, because there's life in God's word. There's feeding in God's word. There's no amount of smart sermons will ever take the place of the word of God from God himself. So do you need to get into scripture? Is there something there? Is that what God is encouraging you to do? Do you need to look at silence and solitude? Because you've never thought about that before. And actually, you were a bit uneasy when we talked about that, and that felt a bit odd, because when you go into silence and solitude, when you take time to be really quiet and on your own, in actual fact, it's hard to sit with yourself because there's stuff there. Do you need to spend some more time in silence and solitude? Do you need to look at your rhythm of prayer and the daily office? And we looked at that. So do you need to actually be looking at how do you connect with God all the way through the day? How is it that you can not compartmentalize God? So it's not like you come and you have 10 minutes with him in the morning and then you go sailing through the day and you don't meet him again until the following morning when you have 10 minutes in the morning. Is there a way that God is inviting you to pull him in and include him in your whole day, so that he's not separated? You've not got this segmentation of life where he's in one place and you're somewhere else. So is it about rhythms? Do you need to connect with him intentionally in the morning, at lunchtime, and at nighttime? Do you need to look at your prayer life? Has your prayer life become a quick run in with a whole big list of things that you want God to do? But actually, that being with God and that hearing from God and that simply resting in him has gone somewhere or has never been? Is that what God is nudging you to do? Do you need to look at study? Do you actually need to look for some books or some podcasts? You need to get onto YouTube and look for some guys that perhaps, you know, there's lots of folks out there who are preaching amazing stuff that I'll never have the opportunity to go and see live, but actually YouTube is a phenomenal resource in terms of being able to catch up and to see some of that stuff. Do you need to get yourself into podcasts? Do you need to look at books and study? Do you actually need to dig deep in some of this stuff of God in terms of your up connection? Do you need to look at Sabbath? Is life so frenetic and so fast-paced that actually there's never time when you stop? There's never time when you actually just enjoy who God is and what he's given you? Do you need to look at that? Do you need to think about simplicity? Has life got so complicated that in actual fact you're all tied up in knots? Do you need to look at how complicated life is and what you're trying to do? Do you need to try and drill back down into what the simplicity is, what the thing is? Do you need to look at tithing? Because actually that's part of our up relationship with God as well. Do you need to look at what you give? And is that uncomfortable to sit with that? Because actually, you know, God's been giving you a bit of a push about that. Do you need to think through that? And do you need to connect with God and see what it is that he's asking you to do with that? So how is your up connection with God? How's your in connection with yourself? How are things with your physical body? Do you need to look at eating, sleeping, and exercise? Is that something that you need to think about? Do you need to think about emotional health? Because in actual fact, you know when you've sat with stuff over the last 7 weeks that stuff has bubbled up and it's been uncomfortable. So do you need to actually come for an inner healing appointment, or do you need to go for counselling and book yourself half a dozen counselling sessions to process and work out what it is that's actually going on? Do you need to think about loss? Have you discovered that in actual fact there's a ton of loss in your life that you've never been able to sit with and you've never had the chance to grieve over? Is that something that would be useful for you to do in this particular season? Do you need to think about play and recreation? Is life all work and all hard? Do you need to look at play and recreation? What do you do for fun? And if the answer to that is I can't think of something, then perhaps play and recreation is the one you need to go for. Do you need to think about journaling? I want to say journaling sometimes in this place in White Inch gets a bad press. There are those of us who journal and there are those of us who laugh at other people for journaling. Can I say to you that, do you know, sometimes it's the thing that makes you feel most uncomfortable that's actually the thing that you need to do. And so I want to encourage you, if you've never sat with it, and journaling can take many forms. You don't need to journal with a pen and a bit of paper and start writing screeds and screeds and screeds. If you're artistic, you can journal through in a creative way through the art that you do. If you are musical, you can journal through the songs that you sing. If you are into video and tech stuff, you can journal through the spoken word, or you can journal through the videos that you make. There are are lots and lots of ways to do it. It's a way of setting aside time to actually drill down into the stuff that's there. And what about the out stuff? What's God inviting you into or out of just now? And we've heard that already this morning. What's God inviting you into, or what's he inviting you to step out of just now? What needs to start, to stop, or to continue? Because the thing is, if you're putting something in, then you need to work out what you're going to put out. If you're going to start something, you need to work out what you're going to stop. There's no point in taking on something else and trying to keep everything else going. So what needs to stop? What needs to start? What needs to continue? What are you doing with your finances? And that's an out thing as well. What are you doing with your finances? Are you investing into stuff that is good to invest into? Are you sowing into the kingdom? What does that look like for you? Are there relationships in your life that need looking at? Over the last 7 weeks, have you suddenly become uncomfortable because there's some relationships that just aren't good for you? There's some relationships that you actually need to invest more in, but there's actually some that you need to invest less time in. Do you need to make amends with some people? Are there some people around that you know that there's stuff between you and them and you actually do need to go and make amends with them? The making amends thing, those of you who are familiar with the 12-step programs, making amends, I think, is one of the most powerful steps in the 12-step programs. My friends who are part of 12-step programs, the power that there's been in that for them in terms of them becoming free, not necessarily the other person becoming free, but them becoming free, incredible power in it. So how are you investing in friends and family? Is that something else? Are you so busy doing stuff for God that your marriage or your friends or your family are taking second place? What does that look like? We do everything for God, but actually he's placed us in a family. He's placed us with friends. We're meant to be doing this out of our marriages or out of our singleness. What does that look like? Do you need companions for the journey? Because this is a hard thing to do by yourself. It's really hard, and it's hard to keep the motivation up. It's hard to keep doing it because something else gets in the way and you push it to one side because this thing has become much more important than the stuff that you started out to do. So do you need somebody for the journey? Do you have a mentor? We just did an evening of mentoring training on Friday night, and there was 20-odd folks at that. So we are now in the position where we have folks who really want to mentor. If you are sitting there this morning thinking, you know, I've thought for years I'd like somebody to mentor me, somebody to just walk alongside me and ask me the tough questions that nobody else dares to ask. If you want that, come and speak to me, because we do have folks around who want to do that. Do you need a spiritual guide? Do you need somebody who will just sit with you, who will pray with you, who will help you stay on the right path? Do you need to find trusted friends and accountability partners? Do you need people who will walk with you and who won't only say the nice things to you, but will also say the difficult things to you? So what is your up, your in, and your out look like today? And the challenge this morning is to find out what trellis you need to build in order to move forward with this. Because the information that you've had over the last 7 weeks plus the motivation is not enough to see transformation. We do need a plan. If you buzz on to the very last one, the last slide, what's coming out this morning is this. Okay, so it looks nice. Switched on to what would be Dave's microphone, I think. Yeah. So this is what it looks like. It looks like this. These sheets are up the back. It's going up on the screen as well. The rule of life looks like this. If you want to do this, there are a pile of these sheets up the back. On the back of the sheet is where I've just been with the up and in and out suggestions. What I'm suggesting to you is that you put today's date on it, and then you decide when you're going to review it. And in the boxes, you decide, where is it that God's asking you to build that trellis at the moment? Do you need to invest in the up stuff? Do you need to invest in the in stuff with yourself? Do you need to invest in the out stuff? How are you going to do it? So in the triangles, in the blank triangles on the big triangle, what you're going to do is decide what it is you want to do, and you're going to write down what it is you want to do that's going to help you build a trellis, either to be able to love yourself better, to be able to love other people better, or to be able to be more connected and to love God better and to receive the love of God for yourself. What I'm suggesting that you do with this is that you start very simply. If you take this and you fill in four things in each triangle, then very quickly you're going to get awful fed up with it. What I would suggest to you is that you pick one thing, and for all of us there'll be something that has been that has not irked at us, but has just jarred with us, or has been poked at us, or has just sat with us and landed with us in terms of, what is God asking me to do now? What does it look like in my life to build a trellis so that I can get better at this, so that I can know myself better, so I can love others better, so that I can be connected with God better? The sheets are at the back. Please take them on your way out. And what I want to encourage you to do is to find somebody that you can chat with this about. Find somebody that you trust, that you can share your rule of life with, that will actually mean that you'll do it. Because if you don't, then it'll just all fall to the one side, and in 6 weeks' time you'll have forgotten the 7 or 8 weeks' worth of stuff that we've done here. This stuff is transformational if you let it. If you let it do it, and if you engage with it, it will transform not just us as individuals, but us as a congregation too. And I want to finish with, what really is the point? The point of this whole thing is that it is not about introspection. It's not about sitting there having a good time with yourself, or sitting there working, being able to throw a big pity party that says, isn't my life terrible and I need people to help me? It's not about that at all. It's not about feeling good about ourselves. It's not about patting ourselves on the back, saying, look how far on I am, I don't need to do that. It's not about doing that either. This is about, how do I give myself to others and to God? That is the crux of this. This is what the whole 8 weeks have been about. If you don't know yourself, how can you give yourself? If you don't know God, then I'm giving of myself, I'm not giving of him, and I'll run out eventually. If I don't love other people well, if we as a fellowship don't love each other well, if we as a family don't love the people that God brings to us well, how are we any different from what's out there? We want to be marked by something that is radically different. This is about how I give myself to other people. And you know, sometimes we look as if we're giving of ourselves to other people, but actually the place that we know we're in ourselves is a place of deep resentment. Because I'm giving and giving and giving and giving, and I'm thinking, stuff this for a game of soldiers, I've had enough. I'm pouring out and I'm pouring out, nobody's putting anything back. And at that point, often that's because we're giving out of ourselves and we're not actually giving out of him. If we're not connected to God, if we don't have the love of the Father, if we don't have the transforming power of Jesus in our lives, we can't give what we don't have. And the only way we can have it is if we can love ourselves, if we can love him, and if we can love others well. It is the full buna, it's the full thing, it's the whole thing together. It's not just one bit or another. I heard about a fortnight ago something I didn't want to hear. And you know, sometimes you hear those things and then they just stick with you. So the nice things that you hear that you think, that's a lovely thing, I'd like to remember that, are the things you forget. And the things that you go, I didn't really want to hear that, are the things you remember. And so about a fortnight ago, I was listening to a sermon. It was actually Bill Johnson I was listening to. And he had said lots of really nice things. But the one thing he said that stuck with me was, fire always falls on sacrifice. And I thought, oh man,
Let's not hear that again. Fire always falls on sacrifice. But you see, I can't give of what I don't have, and neither can you. The thing is that Jesus gave his all for us. That's what he did. And the fire fell. He gave his all, and he asks for all of us. First, it's all of him, though. How do we do this? We only do it by receiving what he's already given for us. It's all of him for all of us. That's our relationship with ourself, our relationship with others, and our relationship with God. We're going to take communion together just as the very last act of worship this morning. And I'd love us to do this. And the reason that we held it till after the end of this series, or the end of the sermon this morning, is actually because we cannot give out of what we haven't received. If you want to do this, that's great. This will work much better if you've received from him first. It will work much better if you're coming from a place of being filled with him in order to work out what that trellis looks like to be able to build. The thing is that Jesus gave his all for us. He held nothing back. He was all in. His body was broken and he was all in. His blood was poured out and he was all in. His invitation today is to come and to receive from him, to receive all that he gave and all that he continues to give. But with his invitation to come is also the challenge. So his invitation is come and receive all of him. And his challenge is, are you all in with it as well? So come and receive, that's the invitation. And are you all in? Is this about just another nice sermon that we pass off and we wander off? Or is actually this about being all in because we are into transformation? Fire always falls on sacrifice. The invitation is to come to receive from him whatever it is that you need, to receive all of him for all of you. Alan's going to come and pray, and then we're going to come and have communion.